Welcome back to A Year of War and Peace, the podcast where we go from War and Peace Zero to War and Peace Hero in 1 year flat. We're up to Book 12, Chapter 13. 23 soldiers, 3 officers, and 2 officials were confined in the shed in which Pierre had been placed and where he remained for 4 weeks. When Pierre remembered them afterwards, they all seemed misty figures to him, except Platon Karatiev, who he always remained in his mind a most vivid and precious memory and the personification of everything Russian, kindly, and round. When Pierre saw his neighbour next morning at dawn, the first impression of him as of something round was fully confirmed. Platon's whole figure, in a French overcoat girdled with a cord, a soldier's cap and bast shoes, was round. His head was quite round, his back, chest, shoulders, and even his arms, which he held as if ever ready to embrace something, were rounded. His pleasant smile and his large, gentle brown eyes were also round. Platon Karatayev must have been 50, judging by his stories of campaigns which he had been in, told as by an old soldier. He did not himself know his age and was quite unable to determine it, but his brilliantly white strong teeth, which showed in 2 unbroken semicircles when he laughed, as he often did, were all sound and good. There was not a grey hair in his beard or on his head, and his whole body gave an impression of suppleness and especially of firmness and endurance. His face, despite its fine rounded wrinkles, had an expression of innocence and youth. His voice was pleasant and musical, but the chief peculiarity of his speech was its directness and apositeness. It was evident that he never considered what he had said or was going to say, and consequently the rapidity and justice of his intonation had an irresistible persuasiveness. His physical strength and ability during the first days of his imprisonment was such that he seemed not to know what fatigue and sickness meant. Every night, before lying down, he said, "Lord, lay me down as a stone and raise me up as a loaf." And every morning, on getting up, he said, "I lay down and curled up. I get up and shake myself." And indeed, he had only had to lie down to fall asleep like a stone, and he only had to shake himself to be ready without a moment's delay for some work, just as children are ready for play directly as they wake. He could do everything, not very well, but not badly. He baked, cooked, sewed, planned, and mended boots. He was always busy, and only at night allowed himself conversation, of which he was fond, and songs. He did not sing like a trained singer, who knows he is listened to, but like the birds, evidently giving vent to the sounds in the same way that one stretches oneself or walks about to get rid of stiffness. And the sounds were always high-pitched, mournful, delicate, and almost feminine, and his face at such times was very serious. Having been taken prisoner and allowed his beard to grow, he seemed to have thrown off all that he had been forced upon him. Everything military and alien to himself, and had returned to his former peasant habits. "A soldier on leave, a shirt outside the breeches," he would say. The footnote says, "The peasants wear their shirts fastened by a girdle at the waist and hanging loose around their breeches, whereas a soldier's shirt is tucked inside." He did not like talking about his life as a soldier, though he did not complain, and often mentioned that he had not been flogged once during the whole of his army service. When he related anything, it was generally some old and evidently precious memory of his Christian life, as he called his peasant existence. The footnote here says in Russian the words Christian and peasant are very similar, the one being derived from the other, and Karatayev's pronunciation identified them. The proverbs of which his talk was full were, for the most part, not the coarse and indecent saws soldiers employ, but those folk sayings which, taken without a context, seem so insignificant, but when used appositely, suddenly acquire a significance of profound wisdom. He would often say the exact opposite of what he had said on a previous occasion, yet both would be right. He liked to talk, and he talked well, adorning his speech with terms of endearment and with folk sayings, which Pierre, though he invented himself, but the chief charm of his talk lay in the fact that the commonest events, sometimes just such as Pierre had witnessed without taking notice of them, assumed in Karatáev's speech a character of solemn fitness. He liked to hear the folk tales one of the soldiers used to tell of an evening. They were always the same. But most of all, he liked to hear stories of real life. He would smile joyfully when listening to such stories, now and then putting in a word or asking a question to make the moral beauty of what was being told too clear to himself. Karatáev had no attachments, friendship or love, as Pierre understood them, but loved and lived affectionately with everything life brought him in contact with, particularly with a man, not any particular man, but those with whom he happened to be. He loved his dog, his comrades, the French, and Pierre, who was his neighbour, but Pierre felt that in spite of Karatáev's affection and tenderness for him, by which he unconsciously gave Pierre's spiritual life its due, he would not have grieved for a moment at parting from him, and Pierre began to feel in the same way towards Karatáev. To all the other prisoners, Platón Karatáev seemed a most ordinary soldier. They called him Little Falcon, or Platosha, chaffed him good-naturedly, and sent him on errands. But to Pierre he always remained what he had seemed that first night, an unfathomable, rounded, eternal personification of the spirit of simplicity and truth. Platón Karatáev knew nothing by heart except his prayers. When he began to speak, he seemed not to know how he would conclude. Sometimes Pierre, stuck by the meaning of his words, would ask him to repeat them, but Platón could never recall what he had said a moment before, just as if he never could repeat to Pierre the words of his favourite song, Native and Birch Tree and My Heart is Sick occurred in it. But when spoken and not sung, no meaning could be got out of it. He did not and could not understand the meaning of words apart from their context. Every word and action of his was the manifestation of an activity unknown to him, which was his life. But his life, as he regarded it, had no meaning as a separate thing. It had meaning only as part of a whole of which he was always conscious. His words and actions flowed from him as evenly, inevitably, and spontaneously as fragrance exhales from a flower. He could not understand the value or significance of any word or deed taken separately. All right, there we go, another chapter down. And I get the feeling that that's the end of Platón. Do you have that feeling? Especially because of the way that it says things like he always remained that way in Pierre's mind. It makes me feel like that's, well, a few things. First of all, it's hinting like, Pierre never saw him again. It kind of has that hint about it. But also, it's such a simplistic view of the man. And it feels like if you got to know him better, you would find different sides to him. Different quirks, imperfections, because he doesn't seem to have any of those. But Pierre never gets to know those, does he? The man remains perfect in Pierre's mind, exactly the way he was, which would sort of imply that Pierre never got to know him well enough. Chatov Alster said, Platón's appearance is revealed here. Does he look like you expected him to? Well, turns out he looks round in every conceivable way. Round of the face, round body, round facial features, round shoulders, round arms. Everything's round. Does that mean, like, fat? Does it mean he has, like, a big round belly and big chubby cheeks? That's what I pictured in this chapter. I didn't picture that at all in the previous one, but now that's all I can see. The Michelin Man. But yeah, that's his appearance in my head. Chattel-Velster also said, as Iosif Alexievich was an important person in Pierre's life, Platon Karatev seems to become one as well, according to the following quote. Platon Karatev remained forever in Pierre's soul as the strongest and dearest memory and the embodiment of everything Russian, kindly and round. What do Iosif and Platon have in common to make them as important as they are, slash were, slash will be, to Pierre? What do they have in common? That's a good question, and not really something I feel like I can answer. No one has gone in on that question. Alexievich is the guy that brings Pierre into the Freemasons, shows him a new way of life, so I suppose you could draw that comparison. Someone that seems like an old wise man sort of thing, like someone who's got it all figured out and leads Pierre down a new path. That's one comparison that does spring immediately to mind. Well, I have this feeling that's it for Platon. He's come into our lives, we've hung out with him for a day or two, and he's shown us how to be, how to have integrity, even in the worst of situations. See the best in things. Do the job that's in front of you, as the great Sam Vines would say. I had another message, a private message from Chattel-Velster, regarding what we've been talking about in the last few podcasts about the continuing of this podcast. Chattel-Velster said, I really like that you're willing to continue your podcast with another book next year. I'd also really like it if we, as a subreddit, can continue next year on another subreddit where we read the same book as is discussed in the podcast. I don't really have any preference for any book, but personally I really like that we had one book for a year this year, but are open for anything else. About the moderating of that subreddit, if at the beginning of next year nobody else is willing to moderate it, I'll keep myself available. Chattel-Velster, you are a legend, and I really appreciate you saying that. I can also understand it would be a bit much for you to do it, and don't think that you need to, because I guess there will be enough people interested to do it. About which book to read, tomorrow or maybe earlier, I can put up a poll or something wherein we can discuss which book to read, if no one has put up anything by then. I'm really looking forward to continuing this all together next year. Absolutely. Yeah, me too. The only thing I would say, if you could put up a poll, that would be fantastic. But I do want to keep it within that list of books by Hemingway. That's going to be the new theme of the podcast, Hemingway's reading list. There is, I think it was 16 books on the list. And I posted about it recently. I can't remember exactly where it was. I'll have to dig that up as a reply to you, Chattel-Velster, but there's 16 books on the list. Two are short stories. A handful of them are Russian novels. War and Peace is on there, obviously, and Anna Karenina as well. I liked what we were saying yesterday about let's not do another Russian book straight away. So let's veto the Russian ones. That probably narrows it down to about, 10 novels to choose from to go for next. But I'll have to find out that list for you. The other thing I thought I might do is in between this book and the next book is do one of the short stories. That'll probably only take up one or two episodes. So that might be something we can do as a little in-betweener. But yeah, what an awesome thing. Chattel-Velster, you're a legend. Thank you very much for that email. Very much appreciated. Anyone else who's got thoughts about what to do next, how to go about it, please, now is the time to sort of get involved with the community and you can actually steer the direction in which this podcast goes. Alright, thank you all very much for listening. I'll see you tomorrow.